We are Missouri Farm Bureau Insurance, and we're for the people of Missouri. We're for brewmasters, stockbrokers, beauty queens, and truck drivers. Whatever you do, if you're a Missourian, we're for you. We are Missouri Farm Bureau Insurance, and we've got Missouri covered.
Pack your bags, start the car, and get on the road. It's time to go across the country, 2 minutes at a time, for the biggest stories of the day, where they're happening.
Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
Indianapolis, Indiana.
Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
Cleveland, Ohio.
Boston, Mass.
Miami, Florida.
It's the 2 minute drill on the program.
You know, the young people around here are very touchy.
Have you noticed that, Curtis? A little bit touchy. A little bit sensitive. A little bit sensitive. The big hair.
Just a smidge.
The jacket, you know.
Ready for battle.
You and I we're virtually insult proof. There's, like, what are you going to say to us that we don't already know and acknowledge?
True.
Right?
True. I think that absolutely is true of me.
That was funny to the punch.
Yeah, that's what it is.
Danny didn't even catch it. I caught it. That's totally true about me.
That's a little bit true about me.
Not true about me.
If you fire it out first, you can go back and forth because I'm just responding to what you said. I didn't start this.
That was the line of the day. He had a good one during the break. Adam had a good one during the break.
Yes.
Probably not going to say it's got to come in the natural flow of things. Would have been tiptoeing along a line, but it would have been really funny. But that was well done.
Thank you.
Well crafted. That's good. You're dismissed. Get to the...
I've got 90 minutes left.
I'm out? You mean I got to go early on a Friday? Oh, what a killer. Let's get the drill going across the country, 2 minutes at a time, talking to the people. Covering the stories where they're happening. It's brought to you by the University of Kansas Health System. Walk right in, people. 435 and all. You got a sprain, a strain, a fracture. The same experts that care for your Chiefs, for your Royals, they can care for you. They're open 8 a.m. to 7 p.m. Monday through Friday, 8 to 2 on Saturdays. So go see them today. Let's get things started. We're going to begin in Memphis, Tennessee. And why wouldn't you begin in Memphis? It's not Louisville with the
Louisville.
But there is like almost no pronunciation of the eh. In Memphis, it's like M-M-P-H-I-S would be my description of how you say Memphis when you're from there. Greg Gaston, Sports 56, is in Memphis, Tennessee. Greg, how are you, sir?
I'm doing good. It's a little different for me pronouncing it for a guy from Jersey, but I've been here long enough to get it right, I believe.
Am I right? M-M-P-H-I-S would be how you'd spell it.
You got it.
If you wanted to pronounce it correctly.
You got it.
Thank you. Thank you.
Absolutely.
I pay attention. Ja Morant is back with the Grizzlies. Is it all healed, all fixed, all forgiven with Ja Morant and the Grizzlies?
He's back, and it feels so good, at least in the community. It seems like it's all forgiven. Standing ovation when he returned to the court on Wednesday, came off the bench for the first time in his career, played very well. Obviously, he's going to be embraced by the city. It seems like he's being embraced around the league as well with the fan base. There's certainly some that still don't understand, and we don't understand exactly what he was thinking when he did that because he's putting millions of dollars on the line, many endorsements as well. But and it certainly affects his livelihood. But as far as the team and the city, it looks like kumbaya, at least for a while now, hopefully for a long time.
I kept hearing him talk about finding different ways to relieve stress. Help me out. Is there more to the story that I'm not getting? I don't understand possessing a firearm in a public place, how that's a stress reliever. What am I missing in this part of the story?
Well, you're not missing anything as far as that's concerned. I don't know how that is a stress reliever. And I really didn't think he had those type of issues with stress. This is the first time really we've heard him talk about that, anxiety, stress, things of that nature. I don't think he's a guy who's a closet depressed guy. I don't believe so anyway. But it seems like a lot of things now seem to be falling on his shoulders. Obviously, he's carrying his family, his inner circle, and all the people in his life, and maybe he is feeling that pressure a little bit, but this seems to be news to everyone.
Yeah, I don't want to make light in any way, shape, or form. When it comes to mental health, when it comes to the stresses, trials, and tribulations, you got stresses that I don't know about. I got stresses that no one knows about, and we're all dealing with. And so I certainly don't say that flippantly, but it did kind of seem like, hey, this guy had the world by the tail, right? And to have that, I mean, I think it's either a great advertisement to, like, it can look good, but there are tough things going on. You mentioned maybe all this family that's depending upon him and things. I can see where that that would be stressful as well. But hopefully, hey, he's got his life in order and the Grizzlies can focus on basketball because they're really good and they're a team that's a real threat. Can they get it together and find that cohesion? Tyus Jones. Yeah, not Tyus Edney. Tyus Edney was the UCLA guy. Tyus Jones did a pretty nice job filling in for him. I'm terrible with names, by the way, Greg. There's usually a step back to take two steps forward to find that chemistry again when you reinsert a good player. Plenty of time, you think, for this team to be all it can be for the postseason?
I think they can find that time. I certainly think they can become the team or stay the team they were most of the season. They need to get Steven Adams back in the middle. He should be back, hopefully, by the end of the regular season. Ja's getting back into the thick of things. I think this is a team that really can go far in the West. Denver's still the team to beat, but KD coming back to Phoenix would put them right at the top. But I think Memphis is certainly in the top three or four, and I think they have a great chance to make the Western Conference Finals and maybe even get to the NBA Finals.
All right, let's just keep Jaren Jackson going big time, and if he could steal it a few more times, that's what my fantasy team needs right now. How about the Memphis Grizzlies and what Anthony Hardaway's got going? Listen, Florida Atlantic, their run, is that making Memphis fans? It was a tough game and could have gone either way there early. Does that make Memphis fans feel a little bit better about going down in the first round?
No, it doesn't make them feel good at all. The door was wide open with Purdue getting knocked off by Fairleigh Dickinson. They felt pretty darn good against the Florida Atlantic team, which, by the way, joins their conference next season, the American Conference. No, the way that ended, how depressing it was in the final moments, you had fifth-year seniors making mistakes on a turnover, and then on poor defense, they got dribble-drive penetration and a floater to win it, basically at the buzzer. No, it is still depression around Memphis the way the season ended, which was a promising season for the Memphis Tigers.
Is it any better in Knoxville? I mean, I guess Florida Atlantic settled all Tennessee family business by taking out both Memphis and the Vols last night. Look, Tennessee, I had losing to Louisiana because I thought the loss of their point guard would be too much for a Rick Barnes team that's already offensively challenged to overcome. It wasn't. They went to the Sweet 16. And when you get there and you see a lesser seed, you expect to advance. We're going to experience that here. Maybe we'll see. There's an expectation that K-State will advance now because it's Florida Atlantic. If they lose, we'll see how that fan base reacts. But did Rick Barnes get some street cred for winning without his point guard or no? The fact that he went down to a 9 seed, is that got him still on the hot seat?
No, the absolute opposite. This is a guy who just can't get it done once they get to the Sweet 16 in the postseason. His record's not great. He's making a king's ransom. They had to build an excuse without Zakai Ziegler. Then they go out and they beat Louisiana. And then they beat down Duke, which was a shocker to me. So once I saw that, I thought they would cruise with their defense against Florida Atlantic. But once they fell behind, they couldn't find the way to score the ball. That was a problem all season long. So, no, fans are very irate with Rick Barnes. The opposite of Memphis, where they're very depressed, but they're not irate with Penny Hardaway.
Greg Gaston in Memphis. Great stuff, buddy. We appreciate the time. Thanks so much. Have yourself a great weekend, my friend.
You as well. Thank you. Tulsa, Austin,
Oklahoma City, Seattle. Dick Fain, KJR in Seattle, Washington. Dick, how are you, sir?
How you doing, my friend? What's going on?
Well, a little college basketball. Great night last night. We loved watching the Cats get the win. And then we see Gonzaga looking like they are dead to rights, down 13 to the UCLA Bruins, coming back, getting the lead, losing the lead, getting the win. What do we think about Mark Few's addition this year with the Gonzaga, Bulldogs?
Yeah, well, that was a back-to-back thriller night last night with those two games on CBS, no question about it. As far as big picture Gonzaga, this was not supposed to be their year. This was supposed to be a year where, they make the NCAA tournament and, they go a round or two, and that's a down year for Gonzaga. And this was supposed to be one of those down years, and it really looked in December and January like it was going to be that, because they didn't really have a point guard on the basketball team that was ready to go. Nolan Hickman was the guy, but he wasn't really ready to play up to the level of the rest of the guys on the team. And really in February and early March, he really started stepping up his game, and they've gotten some other production from the guard spot as well. And they're one of those teams that's just peaking at the right time. And yet, having said that, in each one of their first two, or each one of the last two games, rather, their first halves have been terrible, and they've had to come back from big time deficits in the second half in order to win. And last night, that play call just shocked the heck out of me. I mean, they got that three ball by Strother against BYU earlier in the year to win a game on that same play. But I did not anticipate that the ball was going to go anywhere else other than Drew Timmy's hands, especially being down one. So some big onions, as Bill Raftery would say, on both the part of Mark Few calling that and also Julian Strother, who'd had a terrible game up to that point, both shooting and ball handling, for knocking it down.
Yeah, knocking it down from the logo. And that's good to hear. That's good insight for me personally, because I was like, that's the play everybody's got. That's the play everybody works on once or twice in each practice to make sure that if we have no timeouts and we're going to try to get a look, this is where it is. We'll just extend and knock it down. I was actually surprised that he got as good a look as he did, but you make a great point. If you thought he was going to Timmy, then I'm sure that's the scouting report on probably where they'd go, right? And so it looks a little bit better now after I hear you say that. By the way, Mike Hopkins is still the head coach at Washington, Syracuse grad. I'm a Syracuse guy. I actually, full disclosure, intro to coaching with him our senior year. I'd like to think I played a role in his success, but I'm actually kind of surprised he's still the head coach at Washington. Are you?
I am, but unfortunately it's because of a buyout situation, and we see that in college sports sometimes, especially in schools that basketball is not their number one sport. And it's clear that basketball is not the University of Washington's number one sport. We had a Jimmy Lake buyout that was much bigger than Mike Hopkins' buyout a couple of years ago for the football team, and they found a way to pay that. And they brought in Kalen DeBoer, and he's done an amazing job in his first year as head coach. And I think part of that is, I mean, if you don't have the big buyout for Jimmy Lake, you probably have more money to have the buyout for Mike Hopkins. But I think Mike Hopkins did a nice job in that class you took on the defensive side of the ball, but he might have been falling asleep when they were teaching what to do on the offensive side. Because, I mean, if you just look at the KenPom rankings year after year after year, Washington is somewhere in the 150s to 200 in offensive efficiency. It's just, and it's the type of basketball that you just hate to watch. Like basketball purists, which you have all over the place in your neck of the woods, basketball purists would just hate to watch this offense because
it's just
isolate, pound the ball, dribble, pick and roll, and that's all there is. I mean, there's no motion, there's no back cuts, there's no nothing. It's just really, really frustrating to watch this offensive basketball team because they've got some decent talent, and they should be okay next year. I mean, they could compete for an NIT and maybe sneak up and get a top four or five in the Pac-12. But it should probably be Mike Hopkins' last year in Seattle, barring a miraculous turnaround.
Last question about the Seattle Seahawks, and that is their offseason. They got Geno Smith done. That was the big first item that had to be handled. What do we think about the rest of what they've gotten done?
Yeah, Julian Love at safety from the Giants. Devin Bush at linebacker was a pretty good acquisition. And then the biggest acquisition, Draymond Jones, from the Broncos, who you know very well watching Kansas City Chiefs Broncos matchups. I mean, that's going to be, I mean, he's not a big time impact Pro Bowl type defensive lineman, but he's exactly what Seattle needed. And I appreciate what Pete Carroll and John Schneider are trying to do. They're really kind of zagging. They usually zig, and zigging for them is just not doing anything in free agency, just waiting for all the big contracts, all the bloated money to go out there, and then they pick and choose their spots, and that's worked really well for them. Well, they went on the first day of free agency, said, Draymond Jones, we need you to be a part of this defensive line. And so the biggest problem with this team last year was on the two fronts, the defensive line, which they have completely overhauled, and then the offensive line as well. So that's where I think they're going to focus on primarily in the draft as well, bring some more big bodies in on both those lines of scrimmage.
Dick Vane in Seattle, great stuff as always, my friend. We appreciate it. Have yourself a fantastic weekend.
You too. Thanks, Ryan.
St. Louis doing tech. Scotty Warman, Valley Sports Midwest in St. Louis, Missouri, is up next. Scotty, my friend, how are you?
I'm doing well, sir, and listening to your previous guests, and I was literally just reading a story about one of our Missouri Valley teams that just lost five kids to the transfer portal.
Yeah.
Let the party begin, right?
Yeah. Listen, I love it. I know everybody, it's like a shock to the system because it's not what we knew, but it has created free agency in college football and college basketball. First of all, I'm all for the kids getting their cut of the money that they're helping generate, so I got no problem with that.
Sure.
But I think it's great because I can't wait for the top 50 players in the transfer portal and to see where they go. I think it actually has added an off season to college sports. You don't see it that way?
Absolutely. But my problem is, Saran, is when we have to make preseason picks for our conference and players of the year, I have no idea who to pick.
Yeah.
I don't know who's on each team.
Yeah, there's nothing better than like oh, hey, we're going to do our – we need you to write something for our preview edition. I need it right now. I don't even know who's going to be on the team. Like, I couldn't even begin to write about it now. That's a good point. Yeah, I like that. All right, how about Adam Wainwright being hurt right now for the Cardinals? How much of a problem is this?
Obviously, it's a disappointment. You know, he's going into his last season. He pitched okay in the World Baseball Classic, as I'm sure most people watch, but he didn't really have his velocity. So to find out, you know, when he gets into spring training officially after the WBC with the Cardinals that there's something wrong, it stinks. He was going to be the opening day starter, obviously, again, going into the last part of the season. But the Cardinals do have some depth as far as the rotation is concerned. In fact, Jake Woodford will take his place in the rotation, and he has probably been the best pitcher the Cardinals have had down in Jupiter. Obviously, the Cardinals have had a plethora of players that were involved with one country or another in the World Baseball Classic, but Woodford's looked good, and so now Miles Mikolas, who officially today signed a two-year extension, will be the opening day starter next week at Busch Stadium as they face off with the Toronto Blue Jays. And that was really huge, real quick here, Seren, just for the simple fact that after the season before today, Steven Matz, who they signed the offseason before last, was the only starter out of their top six that had been signed after this year. So now they have two guys at least signed after the 2023 season. So I know that had been a little bit of a concern of President of Baseball Operations John Mozeliak, that he wants to try to get somewhere with some of these other guys as, you know, free agency approaches even during this 2023 season gets going.
Curtis, am I the only one that's completely annoyed by the first world baseball problems I hear being discussed by Scotty Warman?
You are not the only one.
I'm not sure where we'll put all the trophies.
I got a door ding on my Rolls Royce.
Yeah.
Terrible.
Thanks for your love, Curtis. No. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, that's exactly it.
Love you, Scotty.
Meanwhile, the good news is MLS decided to expand. They put a club in St. Louis. And as should be the case, St. Louis City SC,
mm-hmm,
Football Club United is paying their dues and off to a rough start. Not at all, actually. 4-0 with a +7 goal differential, sitting atop the Western Conference standings. Can I just tell you, as a sporting fan, screw you.
We've already started the rivalry, huh?
It's irritating. I'll be honest with you. It's really irritating.
Remember,
St. Louis is a great soccer town. We, you know, I'm old enough. You're old enough. We go back to the Kansas City Comets and the St. Louis Steamers back when the MLS was riding high, and that was a great rivalry in indoor soccer. We're looking forward to the rivalry with St. Louis here coming up. But how ecstatic is the town, and how have the crowds been?
Serena, it's been nuts. I mean, even crazier than what I had ever imagined. I mean, they have people coming out and tailgating hours before these matches. And last Saturday, you know, it was really cold, and they still went 22-5, and people were out, you know, a couple hours before, you know, the opening kick, and were tailgating and partying around the stadium. And it's it really has taken the whole city, really, honestly, by storm. And I, you know, you and I've had this discussion. You'd asked me this several times on your show about, you know, the league coming into St. Louis. And I always told you, even if the football team wouldn't have left here, I always believed there was enough soccer people in this town. And people may not know, just for a little background here, you know, during the Bosnia-Herzegovina war way back when, a lot of Bosnians live now in the St. Louis community, and they're huge soccer fans. So you add that to already the huge soccer base that you had in St. Louis, and I'm just literally surprised that the MLS, it took this long to finally come here to St. Louis. But it really has been an overwhelming success, obviously early on the field, but off the field, everybody's talking about it. You go around town, you're in the shops, you're in the stores, wherever, restaurants, people are wearing the jerseys, the ball caps, you name it. So it really has been pretty cool to see what's transpired with the MLS team here.
Yet another time, Scotty Warman proving he's not just our St. Louis insider, but our Eastern European expert. That was nice to get that addition.
There you go.
Bigger, crazier fans. Is it St. Louis SC or is it Battlehawk fans? What a speech that was given. I forget which player it was that was out there talking about the best football fans in the world, Battlehawk fans. A fad or something that's going to have some stick-to-itness?
I think it's going to have some stick-to-itness to it. Actually, I was during the Missouri Valley basketball tournament. Mitch Holtis and I were having this discussion. He was asking some questions. And, you know, one of the things that he's mentioned is the fact that, you know, there needs to be a developmental league for the National Football League. And obviously St. Louis is in the forefront of whether it's the XFL, USFL, or whatever league, because there's obviously still fans, football fans in this town that are craved to watch football. And so when you're getting 38,000 plus for the first two games, and you basically had that when the Battle Hawks were here, what was it, 2 years ago before it took its, you know, two-year hiatus or whatever it was. So, yes, I think that there's just that much of a football fan base, Seren, that no matter if it's the XFL or whatever, people literally are going to go out and they're going to support a football team because there's just been a lot of passionate football people that were waiting for some type of football to arrive after the Rams went to L.A.
And by the way, can I commend the ownership for going with the name Battle Hawks as opposed to the Gardening Hawks or the, you know, Delivery Hawks or Bakery
right.
Hawks? You know, they picked at least a tough bird of prey. Well
Absolutely.
Done.
Absolutely, you have to
well,
do it.
Well
Come
yeah,
on,
yeah, I like it. Scotty, you're the man. Scotty Warman in St. Louis, Missouri. Appreciate the time, my friend. Have yourself a great weekend.
You too, brother. Thanks.
I'm living on the air in Cincinnati.
Ann Mo Egger, 700 WLW and ESPN 1530 in Cincinnati, Ohio, is next. Mo, how are you, sir?
I'm good, my friend. What's going on?
Well, a little basketball. We've got the NCAA regional final here in Kansas City, and one of the schools in your neck of the woods will be playing tonight. Xavier, a 3.5-point dog against the Texas Longhorns. First of all, let's talk about the game. Do the odds makers have that number right in your mind?
I think so. I thought it might be a little closer. But look, Texas is coming out of the Big 12. They were fantastic all season long. And I think if you're looking at the two teams, in terms of deficiencies, Xavier's is more likely to bubble to the surface than Texas. The Longhorns are not a great three-point shooting team. The Musketeers, Sean Miller will tell you this, they're not a great defensive team. And they aren't playing without a key guy in Zach Fremantle. Now, they've played without that key guy for a long time. They've played 13 games without him, actually 14 games without him. But, yeah, I think if you factor that in, if you factor Xavier's defensive deficiencies, I think the odds makers got it right. But I think this is going to be in the middle of what has already been an excellent Sweet 16 weekend. I think this is going to be a really, really good game tonight.
Is the team that's assembled one that Sean Miller inherited, or is this one that, much like Missouri and K-State in our backyards, and much of college basketball was put together all in one off season?
Mostly inherited. And, you know, if you remember, Sean Miller got the job last year while Xavier was making a run to the NIT title. You know, if you go back, Xavier had a very disappointing year last year. They melted down at the end of the season. It was year four for Travis Steele. He coached the first game of the NIT in front of about 800 people at Xavier's home arena. They made a coaching change. They had an assistant coach take over on an interim basis. He leads them to the NIT title. And then in the middle of all that, they hire Sean Miller. So there was something to build upon. There was a foundation there. But he did bring in a key piece, a guy by the name of Sule Boom, who was a first-team All-Big East performer, who played almost exclusively shooting guard at UTEP and put up good numbers. He moved to point guard here, and he's been terrific. He has been – I thought he was the best player in the Big East. He hasn't been great in the NCAA tournament, But he really is the engine. He really has been the difference. And it's not just what he does statistically. I've said this all season long. To really appreciate a kid like him, you have to watch him and how he just controls the game. The thing that I think makes the Xavier team really good is it's really hard to go on long runs against them because their offense just they create buckets. They get points. You can't go on like a 10-0 run against them because sometime in the middle of all that, Sule Boom is going to get a bucket or he's going to create an opportunity for somebody else. And you saw that in the Pittsburgh game last week. Pitt cuts the lead to 10. It's starting to feel like the Panthers are creating some momentum. And Sule Boom, during what had been a rough shooting performance, still gets to the basket, lays it in. He has done that all season long. And so that really was the key piece that they didn't have last year. But the foundational pieces were in place. You know, Jerome Hunter, who has been their best player in the NCAA tournament, he was on this team last year. It's essentially the same group of guys right. that won the NIT, minus Paul Scruggs. You swap him out for Sule Boom, and you have a team that is a 3 seed in the NCAA tournament.
Listen, Sean Miller had, we'll call it a checkered past, but not Rick Pitino's past. You know, and he just was all smiles with a priest up there holding up a Pitino jersey at St. John's University. I just smile when I think of, you know, the moral code. And of course, they didn't fire a guy and withhold his pay for a cause like St. John's did. But it was a little bit of a like, okay, all right, we're going to go down this road. How has it been? And has everybody quickly gotten over the fact that there were question marks and certainly allegations against Sean Miller in Arizona?
Yeah, because what Sean Miller did at Arizona is legal now. I mean, we talked about this extensively 12 months ago. Because, look, it's a split town, right? It's Cincinnati, it's Xavier. It's not 50-50 because UC is the bigger school, but you had a lot of UC folks, you know, sort of waving their hands in the air, going, wait, hang on. This holier-than-thou institution is bringing back this guy who cheated. And my response to that was, you can pay players now. What Sean Miller did is he was accused of, essentially, facilitating payments for players. Now, the NCAA didn't do anything specifically with Sean Miller. Nobody has really proven that Sean Miller himself did anything wrong. But if you are operating under the assumption that he did do something wrong, well, what he did wrong is cool down. You're allowed to pay players. Yeah. So I really sort of feel like in this current climate, you know, Rick Pitino, a little bit different, right? Rick, it was some sordid stuff with sex workers and strippers and all sorts of weirdness. There was the off-court stuff with him being involved in an extortion case and having sex with the wife of an assistant coach. I mean, nothing of that nature
right.
was connected with Sean Miller. But I do think the interesting part about Sean is, you know, he was here 2005 through 2009. Took the Musketeers to the Elite Eight in 2008. Took them back to the Sweet 16 in 2009. And I've said this often with having him on my show. He is a more comfortable, more affable, more almost human guy, you know, somebody who is a little bit easier to relate to, somebody who I feel like the year away from basketball, I don't know what it did to him, but he's a different guy. When he was here the first go around, you wouldn't say he was a bad guy, but it was like no personality, all basketball, all X's and O's, not the most affable guy, not standoffish, not unfriendly, but not overly friendly.
Right.
It's a little bit different now, and it's been fun to watch.
Yeah, well, and you know, a little bit of humble pie will do us all some good sometimes when you have to check yourself a little bit. Tell me, let's start with it this way about Orlando Brown Jr. What do Bengals fans and what does the Bengals organization think they got in Orlando Brown?
A left tackle who's better than the left tackle they've had for the last 3 years. And that's what this comes down to. Look, the offensive line has been a work in progress since the moment the Super Bowl ended at the end of the 2021 season. That's been their primary focus. So what have they done? Last year in free agency, they signed 3 guys. They drafted another one who started every game last year for them. But you saw in the AFC Championship game, they still had deficiencies. They still had to figure some things out at left tackle. They had a left tackle who last year suffered 2 knee dislocations. They also have a lot of questions about the health of last year's right tackle. And so they had to address that position. The way in which they did, it's really hard to be surprised by anything in this day and age. everybody here was floored when we saw that they signed Orlando Brown. And I'm talking about people who are really, really close and connected to the team. I was sitting at a University of Cincinnati basketball game next to the play-by-play voice of the Bay. And I saw the tweet from Tom Pelissero, and I held it up to him. And this is the play-by-play voice of the team. He was floored. So this really felt like it came from out of left field. But the interesting thing now isn't so much how Orlando Brown's going to fit in. It's how do the dominoes fall at right tackle? Because I think what they would like to do is move Jonah Williams from left to right. Jonah is coming up on his fifth-year option. He has no contract beyond 2023. He has reportedly requested a trade. What can they get for him? Is there a market for a guy who has effectively just been demoted, who's coming off knee dislocation surgery? The Bengals have never been a team that if you put a gun to their head and say, trade me, they usually just shrug their shoulders. Jonah Williams has no incentive to not play next year. So how does that play out? If they do trade Jonah Williams, is Jackson Carman really going to be the guy at right tackle? He was the guy that stepped in and played left tackle when Jonah got injured in the playoffs last year. When are they going to cut Lyle Collins? Do they try to bring Lyle Collins back at a reduced salary? You know, he was their starting right tackle for most of last season. He's coming off an injury. And so what we know is Orlando Brown Jr. is going to play left tackle for the Cincinnati Bengals. The questions now are about the right tackle position, and those are going to be interesting offseason storylines moving forward.
Yeah, they certainly will. Mo Egger in Cincinnati. Great stuff as always, buddy. We appreciate the time. Have yourself a great weekend, my friend.
Bye, man. Thanks.
All right, the Jazz, end of the hour answer. Drew Timmy now has 10 20-point games in the NCAA. 10 20-point games in the NCAA tournament, breaking a tie with six other players.
That have nine. It's like Corliss Williamson was
that's one. There's been one since him.
God, let me think here. Let me see if I can think. Is Rip Hamilton one, maybe?
Rip Hamilton's the most recent.
Ooh, okay.
Nice work. Yeah. Four more.
Sounds like something Danny Manning might have done.
Danny Manning, three more.
Ooh. And now I'm hot.
One between Manning and Williamson.
Glenn Rice had a monster.
Glenn Rice.
Okay. All right. All right.
Two more.
Got to be old school guys, right?
Yep. Both did it in the same decade.
Did I see, were they going through something when Princeton won about, Bill Bradley?
Bill Bradley.
Okay. One more to close it out, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Well, one of the best college scorers of all time, and in that era, I think he was the same decade, Elvin Hayes?
Nope. Yes, Elvin Hayes.
I got all those right?
You did.
Are you impressed?
No.
Yeah,
I took a picture
of it on SportsCenter last night.
I've been around long enough to know when you're playing. I was like,
see. But I did a good job of selling it. For people out there, yes. You're like, God, man, yes. Petro's killing it on this thing. How's he doing it? Oh, my God. No, I cheated. Totally cheated. I never lie. I never, ever. If I get it, I honestly got it. We've said it before. Mm-hmm. There are times we'll guess during the break, and then we just kind of come back and reenact the guessing. Like, so if it took me like five during the break, I'll go ahead and give it five tries. I totally cheated on that one. I think out of those, Danny Manning, I would have gotten at about guess seven or eight. I probably would have gotten to Glenn Rice. Not a snowball's chance in hell I would have gotten to Corliss Williamson. I maybe would have stumbled around towards Elvin Hayes because I do remember how great a scorer he was.
But they played fewer games back then, so you'd think to do it 10 times, you had to have had at least two deep postseason runs.
If I were given 20 guesses, I think I would have gotten Danny Manning, Glenn Rice, and maybe Elvin Hayes. Yeah. Maybe. With some clues, I would have gotten Elvin Hayes for sure. I don't know that I certainly remember Corliss Williamson, but he was such an
They went to back-to-back final championship games, so he played 12 games in those
and
two.
He was the number one player in the country, I think, when he went to Arkansas.
Yeah.
And he was like when everybody thought, oh, anybody who's like 6'6 and plays with their back to the basket is Charles Barkley.
Right.
And so they would go, guys like him and Clarence Weatherspoon actually had a pretty good career out of Southern Miss, but like every 6'5", like remember it was the Wake Forest one. Carlos Rogers.
Rodney Rogers.
Same thing.
Yeah,
about the same.
Carlos Rogers was a Michigan State wideout, I think.
Okay, sure.
High pick.
I meant the Wake Forest.
Yeah, Rodney Rogers.
Yeah, okay, 54. But all those guys were going like 10, 11. Like, no.
None of them.
No, Barkley is a unique beast.
Yes.
There hasn't been another Barkley. Like, when you watch Corliss Williamson, you're seeing Barkley-esque.
Mm.
That's what Charles Barkley was like. That's the way he played. Every guy who's 6'6 and plays back to the basket is not Barkley.
And it took a truly great UCLA team, which got there by the second time Tyus Edney's name will have been mentioned today, one of them inadvertently. It took a truly great UCLA team to knock off Arkansas in that second, that 95 title. They would have gone back to back. That team was fantastic.
Deep, yes.
Just guards for days, and
yeah,
a really good veteran forward, and Corey Beck, and that they were
Todd
they
Day, were, Lee Mayberry. Talk about that one.
No, the 93, the 94-95. Todd David, Lee Mayberry were a little earlier than that, weren't they? Like, weren't they around 90 or 91?
Yeah, they were on that.
They weren't on that 93-94 team.
Really? Lindsey Howell. I had Lindsey Howell in my player pool, my first player pool in 90.
It was like Skip Dillard, and who was on that? 90?
Fat Ollie, Oliver Miller.
Here,
Kansas City missed out on what might have been an amazing Elite Eight game in that 94 run, because Kansas was the one, and I think the Hogs were the two. Coming through Kansas City. Was
95.
That 95?
Yeah,
it was when they were going for the repeat. You're right.
What do you mean? We had Memphis, Virginia, Kansas, and Arkansas here. What are you talking about? We missed something.
Kansas kind of choked, or Virginia upset Kansas.
Or maybe somebody was better.
No, yeah,
I know
Virginia
beat Kansas people to actually
imagine
that. My point
is, in Roy versus Nolan Richardson matchups, they were great games. And Virginia, give them credit, stepping up and beating Kansas.
Give them credit.
I think would have... The pattern suggests that would have been another great Roy versus Nolan matchup.
I was press row at Kemper for those games. Curtis Staples, that's how long I've been in this business. Curtis Staples and Dean, what was it, something Ricky Dean or something Dean, were there.
Oh, yeah.
Junior Burrow.
Burrow just killed him that night.
Big-ass 6'8 forward. Played kind of like J.R. Reed did. For Virginia, and then they beat Kansas. I don't remember anything about the Kansas team. That would have been the young version of Rafe and all them, right?
That was, I think that might have been Jocks.
Yeah, was it the year that Syracuse pantsed them? No.
No, that was next year.
Yeah, it was next year. And then Lorenzen Wright and David Vaughn at Memphis were going up against Arkansas. And that crew.
We went to watch the practices back. Do they still do open practices for fans?
I don't know. They did
sites?
Back then.
But yeah, we went up there to watch the open practices.
Who was spring break? The Memphis coach was the one. He was good. He took them to the Final Four with Keith Lee and William Bedford.
Joby Hall?
No, that's Kentucky's coach.
Dana Kirk. Dana Kirk was the Memphis coach.
So he took him to the Final Four. Who was next?
Was it the same guy who coached Penny? Because Penny was just 2 years before that team.
Heavy set black guy.
It wasn't Dana Kirk. I'm sorry.
No, it wasn't Dana Kirk.
86.
Heavy set black guy.
Yeah.
Had the best shark skin suit. The shark skin suit was in, and I was like, oh, that is just glorious.
What year would this have been?
Tubby Finch.
Larry Finch.
Yeah, Finch. Thank you. Tubby Finch, yes.
Tubby Finch, yeah.
He was actually... He was actually the opposing guard when...
Oh, God. Is this an Ernie D?
Yes.
Oh, geez. Here we go.
Of course.
Get out.
Of course.
Get out.
Six degrees of Ernie D.
Actually, he wasn't. He was a good player, and he wasn't fat when he played.
I assumed as much, as is often the case with the heavier set basketball coaches, that when they played, they were not the fat tubs of goo that they have become.
Weirdly enough, Rick Majerus was actually heavier in his playing days.
Amazing. Yeah, the 94 Arkansas team.
I think you're making that up. I really do. I really think
there's
you're making that up.
There's a chance that's
true. Yeah.
Corliss Williamson, Scotty Thurman, Dwight Stewart, Corey Beck, Clint McDaniel.
Was Darnell Robinson on that team?
Yes, he was.
He was like a top five recruit. He didn't do much, but I remember because I had him on my minor league and my fantasy basketball team back then.
And the great shot, Thurman over Antonio Lang out of a timeout to put him up three.
Mm-hmm.
those two fantastic games.
All right, let's take a break. We are going to talk to the great Kevin Harlan coming up in our 5 o'clock hour. You're listening to the program here on Sports Radio 810 WHB, your home of the NCAA tournament. By the way, we'll be scooting a little bit early to get you to the tournament at 5:30 tonight. Wake up your mind, Curtis.
I'm trying to.
Isn't that the first line of this?
Mm-hmm.
Is it wake or make? I don't know.
Is it make up your mind?
Eh, whatever.
Something up your mind.
Yeah.
Up your mind,
Jobu.
It is the program here on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Who would have thought that he'd go on to become a successful pitch man?
Yeah, who would have thought? By the way, I put out on our poll question today, brought to you by our friends at Gann Asphalt and Concrete. Mm-hmm. Kansas City's nationally recognized full-service paving and pavement maintenance contractor. Parking lot problems, poof. They've been disappearing in Kansas City since 1994 when Gann Asphalt and Concrete started solving those. Free consultations, no commissions. In-house crews, every project comes with a written warranty. Find them online at GannAsphalt.com or call 816-484-3338. The best in the business. Make your business. Listen, when you drive into a parking lot, it's like the front step of your house, yeah. Right? Like, don't give a crappy impression. Call Gann. They'll take care of you. I put the poll question out there. How far does K-State go now that we know that they're here in the Final Four? What do you think the fans are saying about how far they think this team is going to go?
My guess is the vast majority will say that they are going to lose in the Final Four. But I bet more people will say they're going to win the title than lose in the Final Four.
So far, it's still
losing the championship game.
Still some time to vote at Soren Petro, SORENPETRO. 15.8% say national champions.
Yep.
15.7% say losing the Elite Eight. These percentages don't add up. How's that? I've only got like.
That's it. That's right.
Is that right? 16, 32? Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. And 61% say losing the Final Four. I thought it was 6.1.
Yeah, that wouldn't have made sense. Florida Atlantic, fourth school to go to the Elite Eight after beginning the year with no NCAA tournament wins. Name any of the other three. Brought to you by Joe's Kansas City Barbecue.